Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, April 12th, 2021. I'm joined by Alex Brown from Cornwall, England. Alex, how are things this week?
Very good. Thank you, Graham.
So I got to say, like, what the heck is there to talk about? I mean, I feel like decisions are out. What do we have to talk about this week?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, in terms of round two, things have quietened down considerably in terms of decisions rolling out. So we've definitely exited what we call decision weeks for round two. But there's action on round three now, right? So application deadlines last week, this week, even into next week. For those late folks or those that are sort of taking a bit of a punt into round three, maybe you've got offers in round two and you're sort of maybe taking a little bit of a Hail Mary in round three. But yeah, round three deadlines right now, Graham, and lots of folks on decision wire trying to figure out their offers, discussing, you know, with the community, you know, the different offers that they have, trying to get some additional guides. And I have to say, your co-founder, Elliot, has been super, super engaged on DecisionWire and offering, I think, some really strong advice in that regard, as well as the rest of the community. So there's some folks now that are becoming regular on DecisionWire, really sort of sharing their thoughts and ideas because they've been through this process themselves, perhaps in round one or even perhaps last year. So yeah, DecisionWire is really good right now.
Yeah, agreed. And I do want to give a shout out to Elliot and to the community members who are posting. I think, you know, Elliot, who, you know, part of the reason we co-founded Clear Admit together is he's someone who loves to sort of think through strategy and is a great person to bounce ideas off of. And he's obviously, whenever someone's got a dilemma, and in this case on DecisionWire, we see lots of people posting like, hey, I was admitted here, here, and here. You know, my spouse has a job here. I've got this much financial aid. Those are exactly the kinds of problems that Elliot loves to dig in on and try to help people solve. So there's a lot going on DecisionWire. And you're right, our community has really stepped up answering people's questions.
And consequently, Elliot has more love now on our community than you do, Graham. I won't call it karma because that would be clearly stealing it from Reddit, but more love. We'll call it love.
Yeah. I know. I need to get back on the site and post more to try to. We've got a little race going on now. So we'll see. We'll see. I will do my best over the coming week. I wanted to talk about something that's really interesting that's going on right now, which is there's this Oregon New Venture Championship, which is an annual business plan competition. It's hosted by the University of Oregon's Lundquist College of Business. And basically, you have student teams from graduate programs around the globe converging for a week-long event of, you know, pitches, feedback, practice, and turning kind of their dreams into like destiny, right? So basically, this competition works to educate, inspire, and empower future entrepreneurs. And this year's event is going to be obviously virtual. And the viewing is actually open to anyone that's interested in keeping up with the competition. It starts on April 21st, so we still have a little time yet. And for more information and to view the action, you know, as it happens live virtually, you can visit business.uoregon.edu/NVC. So check that out. That's going to be kind of an interesting competition. And I did want to say, speaking of competition, I don't know if you saw, Alex, but our March Madness competition where we pitted MBA employers against each other, or kind of post-MBA employers, is over. And so do you know who won? Did you follow this at all?
You just told me before we came on air, Graham. So I'm going to disclose that fact and then say, yes, of course, Google won.
So Google beat Bain, as you know, and it was close. It was 52.4% for Google and 47.6% for Bain. So it was a really tight race. I thought it was a fun competition. I did think it was interesting to see that despite, you know, increased interest in tech jobs, and despite Google winning, you know, the whole competition, it was interesting that in the final four, you still had McKinsey, Bain, and BCG. So I feel like that's, you know, that's pretty reflective of what we see on the site. But, you know, everyone talks about this rise of tech, and it's definitely there. But it was just kind of interesting to see those companies still hanging on in the final four, even though it was Google that prevailed. So fun stuff. Did you vote or you didn't get a chance?
I didn't vote, full disclosure. But this whole rise of tech is a super, super interesting issue, Graham, right? So I know I'm going off on a bit of a tangent here, but we've had this discussion on Livewire in terms of will it be easier to apply next season versus this season? And lots of folks debating, including Elliot, who weighed in with a very thoughtful response, I thought. So the reason why I bring it up in terms of this rise for tech is that, you know, the presumption is we're in an economic downturn now, so people are flooding to business school. We'll come out of that economic downturn over the next year or so, so less people want to go to business school, so therefore it'll be easier to get in. That's sort of the big picture sort of thought process. But I don't know that this pandemic is reflective of typical economic downturns. And clearly right now, tech is hoovering up top talent. They really want top talent, because who has really benefited in this pandemic are the big tech firms, no doubt in my mind. So it's a really interesting conversation on Livewire, Graham, I think.
Yeah, and that I agree. And we actually even talked about it on Clubhouse when we did our kind of weekly MBA admissions meeting on the site, on the platform there. And it is, I'm fascinated. I really think that next year will be equally competitive to this year in terms of admissions. I don't see any other kind of path to, like, I just don't see it being easier. That's for sure. If anything, it could be harder. So it's going to be a challenge, I think.
And the person that started the conversation on Livewire was basically, the context was, I've got an offer, but I think I can improve over the next 6 months. Should I leave the offer and come back as a reapplicant and sort of aim a bit higher? And a lot of conversations basically saying, we think it's still going to be very tough next season. So why not take what you've got rather than take a punt on something different next season? Anyway, it's a great conversation. We talked about it yesterday on Clubhouse, which gives us last week. It is yesterday, but not when you're listening to this. We talked about it on Clubhouse. We had a really good conversation, frankly, on Clubhouse. I know, Graham, that we've only gotten a few folks attending our Clubhouse meeting so far, but I'm really enjoying those conversations and chatting directly with candidates. We had on Clubhouse yesterday, one of the candidates, I think their name was Eric, I really apologize if I remember that incorrectly, but he'd been successful in the process, was sharing some of his successes. I thought that was brilliant. And we had a couple of candidates that are thinking of applying next season and sharing their concerns, one about recommendations and the other talking about applying this season on a GMAT waiver and coming back next season and so forth. I think super interesting conversations over there on Clubhouse, Graham.
Yeah, and we're going to do it again. So this Thursday at noon Eastern, you can tune in. We'll be back. And it's been fun to engage with folks. I mean, obviously, we love doing this podcast, but it's also interesting on Clubhouse to be able to directly, you know, converse with candidates who I think many of whom are listening to this show, but it gives them a chance to kind of interact with us. So that's been fun. A couple other just small housekeeping notes, Alex, before we get into the wiretaps, because I know you picked out three really interesting cases this week to discuss. The first is that we've been doing this Real Humans alumni series on the website. And I think most people know last year we did a big focus on consulting, a little bit of banking, and some of the like really traditional jobs that folks go into, even tech. You know, we did, you know, Facebook and Amazon and all that stuff. But this year we decided to look at some other landing places that candidates go to. And so we've done Real Humans for Tesla, Nike, General Mills, Johnson & Johnson, Ford, GlaxoSmithKline. So we're trying to highlight some of these other CPG, healthcare, automotive kind of industries. So those have been coming out. It's a great way to learn about someone's journey. All the people that we profile have gone to a top MBA program and now landed at one of these companies and have been working there. So really interesting conversations we've had with those individuals, and those interviews are all posted on the website. So please check that out. We also did a piece about a candidate who reapplied to HBS and is a current student there now, so a successful reapplicant. That ran last Friday, so definitely check that out. And then I did want to give a shout out to a one-off episode of the podcast that I recorded with Cassandra Pittman, who is a Columbia Business School MBA graduate, and she also worked in admissions at London Business School and then INSEAD for several years. And so we had a really interesting conversation about her career, her exposure to admissions at a couple of top schools, and, you know, her attending Columbia. So lots of good stuff to check out and spend time, especially if you're sitting back with some offers, or, you know, if you're starting to plan your early applications for next season. There's a lot of stuff to read and listen to from Clear Admit in the coming days. Alex, let's get into the Wiretap stuff, but I did want to also mention we have an event April 28th. So we've got a couple of weeks here, but April 28th, we're doing an event about kind of post-MBA careers. And we've invited heads of recruiting from Bain and JP Morgan. And I actually think there's some other companies that are going to show up and do a kind of roundtable discussion about what those jobs are like. So you'll be able to sign up on the website. I'm kind of giving our podcast audience a heads up. It's not yet announced on our site, and, you know, you'll have to register, but it's going to be announced soon. And so, yeah, that should be fun. We haven't done a kind of career-oriented event before, to my knowledge, so that's going to be good stuff.
Very good.
So unless you have any other stuff for this week, I guess we can move right into
Just one quick thing, because I know, again, before we came on air, you did mention that Cassandra runs a pretty interesting podcast. I didn't know if you want to give that a shout out.
Yes, sorry. Yeah, that's a really good point. So Cassandra has a podcast called Power Done Differently. And, you know, it's available on Apple and Spotify, everywhere else, just like this podcast. And yeah, she just talks with female leaders, you know, women who have done impressive things. But what she does is, rather than, you know, tell the kind of hero's journey type stuff, she gets them to talk about, you know, the bumps in the road and, you know, why, you know, where they've had great success, but also where things haven't gone so well. And they're really candid interviews. I will say sometimes they're kind of R-rated, so just FYI. I think her podcast actually has a little like explicit warning because there's plenty of four-letter words and stuff. But it's a really interesting approach, and yeah, so definitely give that a listen if you're, you know, if you enjoyed the interview we did with Cassandra. Go check out her podcast too, for sure.
Yeah, I haven't actually listened to the podcast, but it does sound really interesting. But the reason why I asked you to sort of mention it, Graham, is it sort of reminds me, in terms of when candidates are really preparing their applications and really thinking about their story and so on and so forth, you really want to think long and hard about those bumps in the road and what you've learned from those bumps in the road to make you who you are today. And oftentimes those conversations will come up either through the essays and the written form of the application or through the interview, but you don't want to avoid them. These are really good learning opportunities, right? So, I think a podcast seems like it'd be absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, good point. There's nothing wrong with failure, and, you know, showing that you can learn from failure can be a gold mine when it comes to writing essays and demonstrating growth.
So just don't fail too often. That's probably not a good thing. Or don't repeat the same failure. That's clearly not a good thing.
Yeah, and avoid the last week I lost, you know, $100 million for our company by, you know, just avoid that. But in any event, all right, let's get into the wiretaps. I know you picked out three amazing candidates for us to go through. So this is Wiretaps candidate number one. So this is a Decision Wire post that we received, and the person does not know where to go to school. They applied to a nice list of schools. They applied to Berkeley, Harvard, Kellogg, NYU, USC Marshall, and Yale. And they're going to start school this fall. They would love to work in tech at a place like Apple, Facebook, Google, Tesla, or Twitter. Their GMAT score was a 720, and they had a 3.9 GPA. This candidate is from Latin America, and, you know, they noted that they're happy with their results, which are acceptances at Kellogg, NYU, and Yale. So they have three offers on the table. They did mention they were waitlisted at Berkeley. So that's kind of where they stand. Now, the reason that this candidate is interesting to talk about is not only, you know, they have to make this choice between Kellogg, Stern, and Yale, but because they were featured on Wiretaps, the podcast episode number 65, which was back in November of 2019. This was at the beginning, like when we first started doing Wiretaps, I believe, Alex, and they wanted to know what we think now of their choices. And yeah, so I actually went back because I couldn't remember. I mean, this is a long time ago. This is, you know, a year and a half ago or something, right? So I went back and I listened to what we said, mostly because I was really worried that that maybe we had steered them in the absolute wrong direction or something. But it turns out that when they posted to ApplyWire and came on the show and, you know, were featured on the show, they had a list of schools that was much kind of lower ranking overall. They had a number of schools that were kind of what I would call more safety schools, and they had a slightly lower test score. And it turns out that our advice was, hey, if you're not applying for another year, maybe try to boost your GMAT score. And I think we said lots of nice things about their background, encouraged them to kind of hone in on their goals a bit more and, you know, aim higher, basically. And it seems that that's what they've done, and they walked away with three offers. So I like this, Alex. This is kind of good news, if you ask me.
No, that's absolutely brilliant. I think it's also reflective of you being a little bit of a nerd and going back and reviewing this original wiretaps. I think that's absolutely brilliant, Graham, that you had the inclination to do that. I'm very excited about this. After you telling me that particular additional element of the story, I had a vague recollection that this might have been that same person, but absolutely fantastic that the person, you know, like you say, was featured. I don't think we had any criticism. I think we really thought there's a lot of upside here. You're not aiming quite high enough, and like you say, if you have another year to wait, maybe you could try to boost a couple of elements too. And yeah, fair enough, going from a 710 to 720 GMAT doesn't really make a whole heap of difference. You'd probably got very, or he or she probably got very similar results with the 710. But absolutely brilliant, and so glad that they came back and posted, and we can feature them again. In terms of this dilemma, Graham, Kellogg, Stern, Yale, you know, they're looking for a career in tech, product management, basically. I mean, Kellogg's got to be hard to beat here, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, and they mentioned that, you know, they're on the wait list at Berkeley, and some might say, oh, Berkeley's not bad either because of proximity to these companies. But they mentioned that they're not really as interested in Haas. So of the schools that they have an offer, you know, with that being, you know, Kellogg, Stern, and Yale. I have to agree. I think, I mean, Kellogg's, you know, highest ranking school on their list and has a nice reputation with placements for these very companies. So I think it's a pretty simple choice. They did mention, I don't know if you saw, but they were curious if they could negotiate a scholarship of some sort, even though they don't have any dollars on the table. And so, like, can they go to Kellogg and say, hey, I'm in at Stern and Yale, can you offer me any money? Or, you know, is Kellogg going to say, well, how much money are Stern and Yale offering you? Like, what's the move there? And can they negotiate at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's difficult to negotiate based on the offers, Graham, because like you say, as we know, Kellogg would be considered in a higher tier than the other offers. And if the other offers aren't offering any money, it's hard to say, I've got admitted to these schools in a tier below, I'll only come to you if you make a better offer than they do, sort of idea, right? You'd say it more gracefully than that, but that's a hard thing to accomplish. I think the only sort of approach might be, and it'd be good to get your thoughts on this, Graham, is I'm so excited about coming to Kellogg. This is a really, you know, I recognize this is a terrific opportunity for me. Based on my resources, I'm still struggling to be able to pull the trigger if I can really make it happen. So, and you know, need to be honest about this. I mean, if you have a lot of resources, then please don't go down this path. But there might be an opportunity to take that approach, but I certainly wouldn't take the other approach, i.e., I'm going to go to Stern or Yale with no money over Kellogg if you don't give me any money sort of approach.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's all about just expressing enthusiasm for coming, indicating your personal financial situation, and, you know, trying to make the ends meet and just wondering if there's anything they can do on the financial package, which right now is zero, but maybe they could move it up a little bit. It never hurts to ask. And as long as you do so politely,
yes.
I think it's fine. You know, you're going to interact with these people when you get to campus, so just be mindful of that. You know, you don't want to have that sort of awkward moment when you run into them later. So that's why you don't make threats. You just ask politely. And, you know, the worst thing they can say is no. They're not going to rescind your offer or anything just because you're asking for some financial aid support. So, yeah, it can't hurt. But again, really, congratulations. I mean, this person's candidacy was a long time in the making. You know, they were on my Wiretaps episode a year and a half ago, right? And then they took time to improve their candidacy, sharpen their goals, which used to be split between like either consulting or tech. So it's a great outcome. Really happy for this person. I'm sure they'll have a great time at Kellogg. And yeah, hopefully they can ask for some money and get it. We'll see how that part turns out.
Yeah, no, absolutely brilliant. Congratulations to them. They're also a 3-star contributor on the site too. So they've obviously been around a long time. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Best of luck, and hopefully best of luck at Kellogg.
And you know, I do remember one other tidbit about this candidate is that they mentioned that there weren't enough Wiretaps episodes. They were kind of using Wiretaps as like a case-based way to learn about admissions. And they said there aren't enough. So, you know, as a result, we've done, you know, like 100 more episodes. So there you go. All right. So let's move on and talk about Wiretaps candidate number 2. So this is another DecisionWire entry, it being kind of decision time, right? A lot of people have offers. And this person applied to Harvard and NYU, and they got into both. The difference is that NYU Stern is offering them $100,000. It sounds like they don't have anything from HBS yet, although Harvard's aid is need-based, and so my suspicion is that they just don't know yet what that might be. Although, I mean, they don't say, so I'm not going to speculate too much there. They're supposed to start school in the fall. They want to work in tech. They listed Facebook and Google as a couple of target companies. GMAT score was a 710. And they indicate, and this is where everything goes a little haywire, Alex, they indicate their spouse will be attending Stern. And the question they ask is, am I crazy to turn down Harvard Business School for Stern? So I turn it over to you, and I know a lot of people on the site weighed in too, but what do you make of this situation?
Yeah, I love this conundrum. I mean, obviously, it's a very tricky situation too. And I think each person's sort of calculus and decision-making is really going to be based on their personal circumstances. So your partner's in one school, you're in another, or whatever, and how you're going to manage that. Some folks will manage it very well. And as one of the commenters posted, it really depends on how strong this relationship is, and so on and so forth. And I think that's got to be very, very accurate. So they get 100,000 aid at Stern, and that's where their partner's going to. They don't know what they're getting out of Harvard, or at least we're speculating they don't know, because Harvard's all needs-based. So they could ultimately get a lot of money out of Harvard too, right? So I'd say look at this money, take the money out of the calculus for now. It's all about, you know, your partners at one MBA program, you have the option of joining them at the same or going to one that's about 2 tiers above. So what are the ramifications of making that decision? I mean, you know, in the long run, Graham, if you went to Stern because your partner's at Stern, you'd always have that, well, what if in the back of your mind in terms of your relationship, that could be a bit of a problem. But then on the other side, if you're both networking, you know, and fully engaged in both of your sort of campus experiences, one or both of you is going to have to dilute that effort if you plan to see each other once in a while. So that's going to... something else to sort of dial into the calculus. Then is it better to have 2 separate networks for both of you or one sort of deeper network? So there's that in play. I think your first job out of the MBA, you're going to do well coming out of New York in the tech sector, Stern. You're obviously going to do very well coming out of Harvard. I think with Harvard, it's more the longer term implications of this decision rather than the short term implications. So there's no doubt in my mind you can go to Stern and get a great tech job coming directly out. And you can probably even do internships during your time at Stern within New York City, tech or whatever it is, right? So lots of opportunity there. But I would think long and hard about the very long term. And does it make sense to have that Harvard brand, as well as think long and hard about the relationship, how strong it is and the consequences related to that relationship. And that's basically what a lot of the site users have been contributing.
Yeah, I think, as you say, several tiers separate these programs in terms of these small, you know, obviously all these schools are fantastic that we talk about on this program. Yeah. But, you know, if you're looking at the little tiers within this top 25 kind of business school tiering, you know, Harvard is a higher ranked school, et cetera. I guess, I mean, my first thought was, well, how much do you love your spouse? You know, I mean, that's really,
yeah, this I mean, is kind that's of
a,
it.
it's a tough thing, right? Because, you know, one thing I want to mention is that Harvard's MBA program is really immersive. You know, you can't kind of coast through it. It's because of the case method. I mean, you literally spend, I would argue, more time preparing for class and more time with your classmates getting ready for these case discussions. And so that means that if this person goes to HBS and the spouse is at Stern, it might be more incumbent on the spouse to come up to Boston, take the train or, you know, grab a flight. And so, yeah, as you correctly pointed out, in both instances, I think that the if they don't go to the same school, each of their experiences will be slightly diluted because they're going to have to go spend time with each other. Otherwise, if they don't spend time with each other, you run into a Black Monday scenario, which I don't know if you remember this from your days working at Wharton, but people always talked about the Monday after Thanksgiving as being called Black Monday. And that's when people came back from Thanksgiving break and had broken up with their partner who was not, you know, who had not accompanied them to school. And this isn't necessarily husbands and wives, it could just be boyfriends and girlfriends. But there was this idea that, you know, business school is so intense and it's such a pressure cooker that if the spouse isn't, you know, with you, that things tend to go awry in different ways. You know, you're not paying enough attention to the spouse, or you maybe find someone else to spend time with. I mean, there's lots of things that can go wrong. And so, it can be challenging. The only thing I will say is that if both people are in business school, maybe it's easier, you know, as opposed to like, oh, my spouse wants to stay back in New York and work. I'm going off to business school at Harvard. Then the spouse who's working expects kind of things to be as they were before, like you're going to be paying a lot of attention to them. Whereas if both are kind of immersed in an MBA program, maybe, you know, you can just put the relationship a little bit on autopilot, you know, and cruise control, and you can both focus very intensely on your MBA studies and then, resume things later. But honestly, I'm no relationships expert. I'm way out of my depth. But I think this is a tough call. I think you are absolutely right that in the long term, there's might be some real brand value from an HBS degree. It's a tough call. I think Elliot, the co-founder of ClearAdmit, he was very much gave a pretty strong argument for both of them to just go to Stern.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure you read, right? So it's a tough call. It really is a tough call. I don't know. I don't have the answer.
It's a tough call, but I would say you and Elliot are both experts in relationships because you're both with your original partners, which is absolutely fantastic.
That's true.
You know, several years later through MBA and everything. But I do think this is a really tough call. Whichever decision this candidate makes, they're going to own that decision and never look back.
I mean, they're both great schools.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, enough said there. We don't want to go out too far out on a limb with our relationship advice, but I think this is a really, it's an interesting dilemma. So let's move on though and talk about Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this is an ApplyWire entry for a candidate who is actually applying to deferred enrollment MBAs at top schools. They're looking at Columbia, Harvard, MIT, Kellogg, Stanford, Booth, and Wharton. And they list the intake year as 2023 because they're just assuming, you know, they're going to apply now and then they're going to work for a couple of years and then start if they get that deferred enrollment offer. They mentioned they've been, you know, they're currently a student, right? They're an undergrad. And so they mentioned they've been doing a lot of kind of internship type stuff, and they've been already actually offered a job for post undergrad in kind of a agribusiness division of a large corporation. This candidate is in India. They want to get into consulting after business school at any of the usual suspects like Bain, BCG, or McKinsey. The GMAT score was a 750, GPA 9.27, which in India it's on a kind of a 10 scale, so very good GPA. And they'd love to end up in the US after business school. And, you know, as I said, they're applying to these deferred programs at all of the institutions I mentioned. So, Alex, this is an interesting one because we've talked a lot about deferred enrollment. And, you know, I just want to turn it over to you and get your take on this candidate because they tick some of the boxes that you would expect one to tick. But I know we talked before we recorded and you had some concerns.
Yeah, I mean, this candidate has a lot of potential, no doubt. Their numbers are outstanding. They've obviously done very well in college. They've got the right internships. They're involved at their college. And they now have their job going forward. They have a plan. They have their ideas. They know what they're going to do. So on the surface, you'd be like, well, actually, this is kind of your ideal candidate for deferred deferred admissions. But I just wonder, Graham, this candidate is part of an overrepresented population applying to business school, right? So IT focused, India heritage, sort of tech and whatever. I'm assuming male, but I don't know that we know that. So let's just assume that my assumption is correct, but I don't know that. so I could be completely wrong with this line of thinking, but if that is the case, I wonder how that really dials in terms of the prospects for deferred admissions. Because if I'm in admissions, I'm looking at this candidate. And one of the reasons why we're offering deferred admissions is we want to lock in high potential superstars now so that they don't go off and pursue a different kind of master's, which they'd more ordinarily would at this stage of their career. And they go off into their sort of professional career and then come back to us in a couple of years. So we want to lock in the superstars. That's why we do a defer admissions. This is a superstar, but a superstar that looks like a lot of other potential superstars because they're from this overrepresented population. So I know in a couple of years, even if this person doesn't apply to my program, I know that other folks that look like this person are going to be applying. So I don't have that same sense of urgency to lock this candidate in. This is my concern with this candidate, Graham, but I don't know what you think about that sort of thought process.
Yeah, no, I could not agree more. I think of deferred enrollment as, you know, it's for superstars, right? And this person, and usually that means, you know, people who have demonstrated a high potential for leadership, even if they haven't obviously had much in the way of work experience yet, leadership on campus or within their internships and things, and then people with stellar academic marks. Mm. And, you know, this person ticks those boxes, but as you correctly point out, I also think, you know, they're using deferred enrollment to try to grab some folks that maybe would gravitate to other masters or, you know, graduate studies. And yeah, I couldn't help but think when I looked at this that an admissions reader might say, yeah, this person's great, but someone just like them or this person themselves will apply as part of the regular process anyway. And so we can wait on this. So I really don't know what'll happen here. I mean, I'm not saying this person should not apply. I mean, they have a nice long list of schools. They may certainly hit at least one of them. And, you know, I think it's an awesome deal to get into business school when you're an undergrad and to have that freedom to navigate the early stages of your career with an offer to an MBA program in hand. So I encourage them to apply. What I would do, though, is I was a little worried, even from the post that they put up on our site, that they might fall into the stereotype of kind of, you know, too much sort of techie. Yeah. There was some language in the post. In fact, they referred to something called industry 4.0 techniques. And Alex, I had no idea what the heck that meant. So I actually looked it up and I learned something. And so I thought I would share with our listeners in case they don't know. And it turns out that Industry 4.0 refers to the fourth industrial revolution, which is the ongoing kind of automation of traditional manufacturing and industrial practices using, you know, smart technology, large scale machine to machine communication, Internet of Things, all this like automated stuff, right? And so I didn't know that, which makes me feel woefully ignorant. Maybe you already are an expert on Industry 4.0. But I realized that if I didn't know what that was, and this person starts throwing those kinds of terms into their application materials, that could spell disaster for how they're going to be perceived. So I'm sure maybe you've already read a couple of books about this. I know you're more on the up on this kind of stuff than I am. But yeah, I just think they need to be careful when it comes to, they don't want to typecast themselves as being overly kind of techie and, you know, yeah, that's just my concern.
Yeah, no. And I think it's a very valid concern, but this is for all candidates, right? Jargon within your industry or whatever, you need to remove jargon so that the admissions folks can understand exactly your story, not assume that the admissions folks are intimately familiar with your particular career path. And this sort of falls into that bucket. Yes, 4.0 techniques, I'm vaguely familiar with that kind of stuff, Internet of Things, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's no doubt this is a super smart person. What I would say to this person is go ahead and apply deferred admission, because again, if you don't apply, you know you're not getting in.
Right.
But if you're not successful, it's a little bit of a knock, but come back in 2 or 3 years' time. As a reapplicant, you'll be stronger. You'll have a track record under your belt post undergrad that you can talk to. So you're likely to come back as a stronger candidate anyway. Really sort of round out your experiences. So get involved intensely in your community. Do something about which you're passionate outside of tech, maybe, to sort of show how well-rounded you are. So if you're not successful, come back in 2 or 3 years as you're growing this great career or whatever it might be, and make sure you apply in round one.
Yeah.
as a reapplicant. Absolutely brilliant. And again, I would say pull the trigger, but pull it with full disclosure of understanding that this is going to be a super challenge for you at this point, but don't be discouraged. And come back in that 2 or 3 years in the round one. And again, this candidate is a superstar. They just sort of fit into this overrepresented bucket, which is a little bit unfortunate.
Yeah, agreed. So I did want to thank all three of our posters this week that you chose, Alex, for sharing their story. I think it just, as our listeners know, it just makes for great conversation and a great way to learn admissions strategy. So thanks for picking them out, Alex. And I hope everyone, you know, wish everyone the best of luck with their decisions and their marriages.
Yes.
and everything else. The other thing I wanted to say is, you know, we haven't gotten any fan mail or reviews or anything for a couple of weeks now. And so you can always reach out to us at info@clearadmit.com. Send us an email. Tell us you hate the show, you like the show, whatever you want to say, just communicate so we know, what to do next with episodes, and use the subject line wiretaps so that the message will get flagged and sent to Alex and myself. And please tell at least one person that you like about this podcast. Or if you don't like the podcast, tell somebody that you don't like about it. in any event, but thanks again, Alex. And I guess we'll be back in 1 week's time with another episode of the podcast.
Brilliant. Thanks a lot, Graham. Stay safe, everyone. Good luck.